Okay, so I've zoomed way ahead to 18th chapter. Start with text 38. There's no purports for solo verses. Looks like we'll go through 41. 38 through 41. And the subject matter is the son of Shamak Rishi has just finished cursing Maharaj Pariksit. Calling him some pretty foul names. Citing Maharaj Pariksit as an upstart, crow, a dog, and a wretched one of the dynasty, most wretched one of the dynasty. And Prabhupada is saying, actually, it's the boy who's the most wretched one of the dynasty of Brahmanas in which he is born. The fault-finding propensity is like that. One finds faults in others that are actually within oneself. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur taught. Very person, Maharaj Pariksit, being the very person who, because of his qualification, made it possible for the son of a Brahmana to be so powerful that just a small boy, he can make a curse that happens because of protection of Brahminical culture, is now being cursed by the product of his own protection, such as justice in the age of Kali. And as the personality of Kali made his way into the consciousness and the heart of this Brahmin boy, Prabhupada writes, gradually, then the other castes. Thus the whole scientific system of the orders of society in this age has assumed the form of a vitiated caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men similarly influenced by the age of Kali. One should see to the root cause of vitiation and not try to condemn the system as it is without knowledge of its scientific value. So that's the end of a cluster of verses. And now 38 begins after. So this is out, he's off playing with his boyfriends and he said this. Now he comes back home. And when he comes back home, he saw there's his father sitting with the snake on his shoulders, a garland of a snake. And out of grief, he cried very loudly. Prabhupada writes, the boy was not happy because he committed a great mistake and he wanted to be relieved of the burden on his heart by crying. So, after entering the hermitage and seeing his father in that condition, he cried loudly so that he might be relieved, but it was too late. The father regretted the whole incident. So, the lineage of Maharaj Pariksit is the Kuru dynasty, and the lineage of the Brahmana is the lineage or the family of Angira Muni. And so that descendant of the family of Angira Muni, hearing his son crying loudly, his fixation of meditation, his trance of meditation, gradually broke, his eyes opened, and it wasn't until that moment that he saw the dead snake around his neck. Then he simply threw the dead snake aside and asked his son why he was crying, whether anyone had done him harm. On hearing this, the son explained everything, what happened. Still, the boy was taking it very seriously. Prabhupada is attributing some kind of regret on the part of the boy's behavior. On the other hand, the main emotion is he felt that his father had been dishonored, and that was very painful for him. The father didn't take it at all seriously. He's just like, psh. But he could see his son was taking it very seriously. And by the influence of the personality of Kali, this horrible act happened, the cursing of Maharaj Pariksit. Text 41, the father heard from his son that the king had been cursed, although he should never have been condemned, for he was the best amongst all human beings. The Rishi did not congratulate his son, but on the contrary began to repent, saying, "Alas, alas, what a great sinful act was performed by my son. He has awarded heavy punishment for an insignificant offense." Now, one way of considering is he's just humble. He's a humble Brahmin. So he's just speaking like that. And another way of thinking is it really wasn't very significant. And in any case, as far as the Brahmin was concerned, he didn't consider it significant, whether it was his humility or in fact. Prabhupada describes in the kingdom there's this saying, the king can do no wrong. Even if he does wrong, the king can do no wrong. The king may order the hanging of a culprit son of a brahmana, but he's not become sinful for killing a brahmana. Even if there is something wrong with the king, he is never to be condemned. Now, Prabhupada is holding standards that are Vedic, because certainly heads of state do things that are wrong, that are punishable. The other example he gives here is a medical practitioner. A medical practitioner is treating a patient, and the patient, in the course of his treating him, he dies. There's no punishment for the medical practitioner. Well, not so in modern society. It's malpractice. And even if you don't have to kill somebody, you just have to make a mistake. An honest mistake. And it's malpractice. So you have to carry this gargantuan malpractice suit, or malpractice insurance. And it's not only in America, it's in India. I know an Indian doctor that they were treating a patient, the patient died. The family brought a malpractice case against the physician. And they hadn't done anything procedurally wrong. You know, by medical text, they did everything that they were supposed to do, and it just happened. And it just like harassed them for years and years and years. Harassed for years and years and years. Anyway, so the Vedic times are over. Medical practitioners are harassed, and heads of state are harassed. But during Vedic times, the king can do no wrong. Even if he does wrong. Now this is when we have qualified kings that are actually qualified. In that sense, we look at that wrong that they did in the way that Krishna looks at the way that the wrong that they did. How does Krishna look at that? Because that's their primary characteristic is ananya bhakti. And because of that, even if there's some discrepancy, Krishna looks at that person as a saint. And so one should look at the king as a saint, above doing wrong. Because that's, if assuming, that's his primary characteristic. He's actually a representative of God. He's not just an agent of Kali in the post of the representative of God and a fallen person who does bad things, like our modern heads of state. So as the king was properly trained, the citizens were also properly trained. And certainly the son of a brahmana was to be trained. He was trained enough to know how to make a curse that kills the king. So he's certainly trained in certain, you know, basic ways. But so what was lacking, Prabhupada says this over and over again, so I'll repeat it, it's lack of culture. The lack of culture is how to behave. Like something very powerful is put in your hand, how to use it. Like let's say the power of speech. Speech can be very powerful. How do you use it? If you use it for abusing people, then you're an uncultured person. You have knowledge. How do you use it? You use it to bash people. That's an uncultured person. A cultured person is one, amanidvam, adambidvam. They actually have knowledge, but there's humility and pridelessness within them as a co-symptom of their position of knowledge. So a really qualified king has all these nice titles. Narendra is one that's mentioned here. Indra amongst the Naras, the best amongst the human beings. So the offense of the son was, as far as his father is concerned, sinful. It's not just, oh, what did you do? That wasn't very nice. You just cursed the king to die. For a brahmana, it's sinful. Prabhupada concludes, he's appreciating the quality of the rishi. Since Shalakrishi was an experienced good brahmana, he did not approve of the actions of his condemned son. He began to lament for all that his son had done. The king was beyond the jurisdiction of curses as a general rule. And what to speak of a good king like Maharaj Pariksit? That's a whole other dimension. Stated by the father, he is the best amongst human beings. He is this qualified king. He's a pure devotee. If you know, we can understand this way, that if the behavior of Maharaj Parikshit was somehow the plan of the Supreme Lord. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. Always with no other position, no other shelter, always in that condition. So how do we look at this situation? Krishna. The brahmanas are supposed to be in knowledge. Their power, their rabbinical power, needs to be used in a cultured way. Mentioned this morning, but I'll repeat it for your hearing. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on this section of the 18th chapter, he details what are the three purposes of Krishna that were being enacted by this very uncommon behavior of inappropriate, unprecedented behavior of Maharaj Parikshit. One of them you already know. It was to set the stage for the speaking of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Maharaj Parikshit's in trouble. Shukadeva Goswami comes to the rescue, speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. So a second that then leads to the third. The second one is the Supreme Lord wanted to place Maharaj Parikshit in a position of absolute detachment. Full absolute detachment. He was already detached. Not only was he detached, he was practically an ascetic. While he was still within the womb of his mother, this is described, the heat of the Brahmastra should have scorched his body. So because the tender skin of a small child, even this is an unborn child, is so delicate that the heat of a Brahmastra, I mean, what's that heat like? And he withstood it because he was such a Kshatriya. The Lord stopped it, but you know there was still scorching heat. He tolerated it. But he's unable to tolerate thirst. He's unable to control anger. And anger at what? There's a sage engaged in meditation, trance of meditation. What's the anger? You didn't receive me properly. You have no etiquette. Rah, rah, rah. It's not Maharaj Parikshit. Unprecedented behavior from Maharaj Parikshit. So that was induced so that he could be brought to absolute detachment. Not to say, well, I guess that means he was a little attached. But it's, you know, it's this thing of absolute. Absolute detachment. Absolute detachment. He just walked away from his kingdom. His royal robes, his crown, his treasury, his queens, his title. Just walked away. Very hard thing to do. Take any one of them. Walk away from your queens. Walk away from the whole of your life. Just like that. And then the third thing Jiva Goswami says was the Supreme Lord Krishna arranged this so that he could bring Maharaj Parikshit back to him. And that's literally what happened. When the the snake bird bit him, his body was finished, but his mind was completely fixed upon the personality of Godhead. Yam yam bhavi smaran bhavam chajatanti kalevara. He went to Krishna. So it's something like the so-called offense of Maharaj Ambarish to Dravas Muni. Technically, it was an offense. Even the Brahmanas approved. It's okay. You've been observing this fast, not just for your benefit, for the benefit of your citizens. You have to break the fast. Here's a way you can break the fast to not break the fast. Clever. So that's what he did, under the advice of the Brahmanas. And for that offense, Dravas Muni lost it completely in a rage of anger. Dravas Muni temper tantrum. And so, same, this Sringi behaved this way. Now, Bhagavatam is instructing us this is specifically the influence of Kali. And why should never be like that? A king, the same explanation that's being presented here is appropriate for Maharaj Ambarish, for that matter. A king is beyond the jurisdiction of curses, as a general rule. What to speak of a good king like Maharaj Pariksit? The offense of the king was most insignificant. And as being condemned to death for a most insignificant offense was certainly a very great sin for Sringi. So we know what happened to Dravas Muni. It was a death penalty. Or here comes Sudarshan Chakra. Now, so the father is understanding, my son is going to get it. And his first thought went to the feeling remorse for the wrong action of his son. And the next thought is the welfare of Maharaj Pariksit. He felt, I need to send a message to him because he doesn't even know. My out-of-control son cursed him to die. Somewhere here, Prabhupada explains, he didn't go in person because it would have been too embarrassing for Maharaj Pariksit that a Brahmin comes to tell him, oh, I'd just like you to know you're going to die. 7 more days. But he wanted him to know. So his father's words are, my dear boy, your intelligence is immature and therefore you have no knowledge that the king, who is the best amongst human beings, again we have this word Naradeva, or and the word for word is unto a man, God, Narendeva, best amongst the human beings, is as good as the personality of Godhead. He is never to be placed on equal footing with common men. The citizens of the state live in prosperity, being protected by his unsurpassable prowess. So, the Brahmana wasn't just interested in his own well-being or his own prosperity. He's a Brahmana. He's interested in the well-being and prosperity of everyone. Not a Kripana, he's a Brahmana. And he's understanding it's because of this powerful king that there's prosperity, including the prosperity of my son to be able to do what he just did. And for somebody that has that capacity, it brings peace and prosperity to everyone. They're not to be treated like this. So he brought prosperity and he brought protection by his unsurpassable prowess. This is one of the understandings of Vedic culture and Krishna consciousness. That when there is a person in charge of others, when there's a head of state in this case, the piety of the head of state immediately is transferred to the citizens, those who are in his care. It works the other way too. His impiety is transferred. And it works the other way also, by good leadership, just like King Prithu said to his citizens, I thank you very much for all of your pious activities, because by your pious activities I get 1/6 of your pious activities. So thank you very much. I didn't do anything, just you did it. And I'm receiving benefit. But the reverse is also true. So because Maharaj Pariksit was so qualified, there was prosperity and protection everywhere. And the Brahmana understood that because he's fixed in knowledge of the scripture. Such a person, you don't treat him this way. Very bad. Very bad. So he's rebuking his son. And training him, instructing in what proper conduct is. Just listening to Prabhupada describe when Jamadagni came to know that Parashuram, his son, traveled all throughout India and 21 times he killed the Kshatriyas, or at least Kartavir Yarjuna. Big battle. To redeem the offense made against his father. His father was very unhappy. This is not the position of a Brahmana. Why have you done like this? This is sinful. So not only you should stop and, you know, say I'm sorry, you can't change that. You should go on pilgrimage to the holy places and purify yourself for this very sinful act. So those that are powerful, because of whatever gift God has given them, it's really their responsibility to know how to use that gift which God has given them properly. Because even a little deviation can have very serious consequences. And one has to bear those consequences, even when they be a great person. Very powerful. Maybe it's better just to remain a simple fellow, and not have so many endowments, not be able to do so much service, because when you're given some capacity to do some service, there's a lot of responsibility also. And if one isn't in proper consciousness all the time, then even that little bit of time that one's not in proper consciousness, do something that's inappropriate for one's position, then it's very, very bad. Others suffer and the person himself suffers. The human life is a life of responsibility, Prabhupada taught. We don't get away from it by being irresponsible, or by just not taking responsibility. Human life is meant for responsible action and responsibility. Brings facility, but it also brings consequences if not carried out properly. So, one may be honored by Krishna to... I mean, as I'm speaking, I'm thinking about service that I now have. I'm like 6 days into my being the chairman of the GBC, and thinking Prabhupada is speaking just about GBC in general. He's saying it's a very great responsibility. And if one doesn't perform that responsibility properly, then one can fall. And then, you know, an officer and then chairman. My goodness. Big responsibility. Better do it right. To do it right means in Krishna consciousness. It's a great opportunity. It's a great challenge, on the other hand, also, to not just simply use or do without proper Krishna consciousness behind the things that one does. Anyway, and each of us has something that we do that there's some responsibility involved in it. Whether it's this department or that department, and life is, human life is responsible. And you do that service responsibly, and Krishna will give you more service and more responsibility. And just keeps going like that. Just keeps going like that. The continuation, the extension into the spiritual realm is we'll be directly dealing with Krishna. Better have it right. You're dealing with Krishna. And Krishna's pure devotees. So there's no room for pride, anger, temper tantrums. Indiscretion, lapses of attentiveness, there's no room for that in the spiritual world. We're with Krishna. So it's a very responsible position, very fortunate and also a very responsible position. Krishna will protect, that's the good news, but one has to be relying upon Krishna's protection or to receive that protection. Okay, any discussion? Yes?
Does the sense of responsibility be more committed to Krishna consciousness?
Yeah.
Some people actually, even material world, they feel more responsible, they have more, more sense of responsibility as devotees also. I feel sometimes I do not have any sense of responsibility towards my dependents and whom I am caring for. How to have that deeper sense of responsibility?
Well, the material sense of responsibility is not exactly wanting responsibility, it's wanting recognition, title, position, honor, some of that stuff. And the devotional side is to want to be able, not just have and misuse, but be able to become spiritually qualified enough to accept very confidential service on behalf of Krishna. And then to do it very nicely, so it increases the intimacy and the confidentiality of the service that one has, the relationship that one has, rather. That should be the idea for a devotee. So the main thing then is the mood of service. Keeps coming up, doesn't it? It's just staying in the mood of service. And if Krishna so desires, a responsible person is given more responsibility. Rather than looking for it, Krishna sends it. That's my experience. Krishna sends it. And those are the persons who can handle responsibility and not become overwhelmed with pride, etc., with that position or the title or the service or the responsibility. They'll become crushed by it or puffed up in the other way. Boastful about, look at, I have this. But just stay always in the mood of service, humble mood of service. That's our protection. It's the internal potency. We're protected through the agency of the internal potency. Just thinking, Jayapataka Maharaj has been making this comment that Krishna stopped me because I accepted too many unqualified disciples. So there's, you know, he had some enthusiasm to accept disciples, but rather than, his own acknowledgement is, rather than being more discriminating and making sure that they're first very qualified, I accepted them as disciples. So that my duty, and the language that we're speaking about, is my duty was not fully and properly performed, and therefore there's a consequence, because it's a very great responsibility. Deliver one's dependents from birth and death. Don't do it if you can't. So even if one can, then make sure you do it. Okay, I can't, and then you don't do it. Krishna, he said, Krishna stopped me. So when you're dealing with Krishna, it's very serious. I mean, it's very fortunate. It's also very serious. So more responsibility. One should be, it's like Bhaktisiddhanta's statement, rather than trying to see Krishna, act in such a way Krishna will want to see you. Rather than wanting more and more responsibility, one should want to be more and more qualified, so that if Krishna so desires, you can handle more responsibility. Krishna, Krishna. Anything else?